Welcome to the Senate Education Committee. On their agenda today, I first would like to announce that we're going to carry over Senate Bill 170 and Senate Joint Resolution 4, and then we're going to go to 333, 330, and 240 in that order. And I would like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 333. Linda?
Senate Bill 333, as originally written, establishes the Oregon Teacher Effectiveness and Career Enhancement Initiative Program within the Department of Education, describes the application process and other requirements of the program. Senate Bill 333-2 replaces the original bill, and Senate Bill 2 amendment directs preparation of a plan to encourage national board certification for teachers and administrators, requires creation of comprehensive leadership development system for administrators, renames professional organization certification fund as the National Board Certification Fund, and sets purposes of fund to promote national certification of teachers and administrators, creates educator preparation improvement fund to improve preparation of teachers and administrators, directs preparation of guidelines for uniform set of core model teaching standards for teachers, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. Representative Baum, do you have anybody you want to bring up, or you want to kick things off?
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Hass and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22, which includes the cities of Woodburn, Jervis, as well as Northeast Salem. And you have my testimony in front of you, but what I would want to share with you is a couple of facts. And first of all, it is my thanks and appreciations to Representative. I wish you were still in the House. But Senator Hass for allowing me to use one of his bills to put this work that we have been doing about teacher preparation. To give you just a brief history, last February we wrote a bill, 3619, about saying, and the question we asked ourselves, are our teacher higher ed programs, are they meeting the needs of our students in today's classroom? We had folks there from deans from public schools, universities, private schools. We had teachers. We had the OEA there. We had one of our key people was Vicki Chamberlain from Teacher Standards and Practices. And what we found out in our first meeting was incredible to the fact of all the good work that was already going on in the state of Oregon. And so we wanted to put something in place. Less than 2 weeks ago, I went to a meeting in North Carolina about students making the grade. I thought probably all states were looking at teacher effectiveness and how we look at that, but I found out very clearly Oregon is very much a step ahead. This fund will actually help us possibly get some matching federal funds, which would be very helpful. But today what we're looking at is we're looking at a systematic way to look at education today. We want to collaborate and look at the delivery systems for professional development. In the past, professional development has been scattered at best and with no real focus and vision. And the third thing it does is we do now have a national board certification for teachers, and it's been in existence long enough that the testimony and the statistics are very, very clear that if you have national board certification, you are a step above and beyond, and your students, the students' outcomes are just incredible. And the reason we started this bill was I went to Chancellor Pernsteiner a couple summers ago, and I said, gosh, Chancellor, do you think our teacher preparation programs are meeting our needs? And he looked at me, and he threw the $50,000 question back at me, and he says, well, what do you think? And I says, well, from a principal's perspective, I would say that there's some gaps. And so this bill came out of that work group. Chancellor Pernsteiner helped get it all organized. We had Dean Hitz and several others that helped chair our group. The OEA actually hosted us throughout our work endeavors and even gave us a little coffee and rolls, which helps when you're having a several-hour meeting. But I'm going to...
Why don't they ever do that here?
Well, this was valuable work. I apologize to the committee. But I do have Vicki Chamberlain here, and Dean Hitz, and I would like to stay and see if you have questions. But I do want to share the breadth of knowledge that I have never seen such energized, incredible work happen. The synergy in the room, any topic that came up, there were like four people trying to talk at one time, and Dean Hitz did his best to keep us on track. But the reality is Vicki Chamberlain in Teacher Standards and Practices has laid an incredible foundation for us to look at this, and the work at Teachers Standards and Practices is not just about teachers, it is about administrators, it's about all of us in our licensure and counselors. And so they have a wealth of experience, and with that I'm not going to try to make any other statements, and but here for questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Great. Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Randy Hitz. I'm the Dean of the Graduate School of Education at Portland State University, and as Representative Comp indicated, I had the privilege of chairing the House Bill 3619 Task Force. That task force actually put together a pretty comprehensive report on how to improve teaching and learning in the state of Oregon. That was our charge. And looking at how do you create a seamless system? Because we're in our silos, higher education, K-12, and we need to bring those together if we're going to maximize teaching and learning in this state. And the fundamental belief is, and there's plenty of research to indicate that this is the case, is that the most important thing you can do to improve education, of course, is to improve the quality of teaching that takes place in the classroom. We can dink around with other things, but at the core, that's what's most important. So that was the charge to the task force. We prepared a report for the legislature, presented it to you. A lot of recommendations, a couple of those recommendations are now represented in Senate Bill 2333-1, and I think -2 now is the latest version, right? And I also want to reiterate a little bit what Representative Comps said, that task force actually grew out of another effort, the Oregon Coalition for Quality Teaching and Learning, which was created in 2007 under the leadership of Vicki Chamberlain, the Chancellor, and also the State Superintendent, bringing together teachers, school administrators, teacher educators, policymakers, including Representative Comp, to talk about how do you improve teaching and learning in Oregon. So what you're seeing here is really a consensus view. That's pretty remarkable, isn't it? A consensus view from the education profession about what are the things we can best do to improve the quality of teaching in the state of Oregon.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Committee. I just have two things to add. The summary that your committee administrator gave you actually represents the whole report and the recommendations that we came up with, and which included pretty equal emphasis on improving principal leadership and administrator leadership along with teacher effectiveness. The vehicle of Senate Bill 333 says relating to public school teachers. So what we've done is we've modified the language of the report to focus on the teacher piece. The second thing we did is, knowing there would not be any extra money this session, is we took the pieces of the recommendations that would allow us to continue the work with your support and come back with recommendations about how we could get this done and what it would cost and what the stages would be. And so it pretty much codifies and we hope represents legislative support for moving forward. We have a lot going on. We are adopting national standards for teacher preparation. We are modifying our standards for program approval for preparation of educators to align with national standards, and we have a lot of other good work going on. So what I gave you was sort of a blow-by-blow of how the report matches up with last session's House Bill 3619 and the executive summary that we gave you. So please don't be scared away by the numbers. We have no expectation of acquiring the funding, but we do want to continue work with the coalition to develop what would it take to get more national board certified teachers into our schools. How do we close those gaps so that Oregon schools feel like they're getting prepared educators, both administrators and teachers, and what can we do in a collaborative spirit to move this forward?
Okay, questions for our panel? Mayor Morris?
I noticed we have the dash one and the dash twos.
The dash twos are the working comments.
And the testimony is reflective of dash ones, but the dash twos, the difference between the two.
Chair Haas and Senator Morris, I can tell you precisely the difference. It's on page 5. Mm-hmm. I don't have them in front of me. It's on page 5, and if you look in paragraph 3 at the end,
it's line 18.
Line 18. Here, thank you. Thank you, Randy. So if you look at lines 11 and 12 on page 5, the dash 1 amendments said that first of all, let me start from the beginning. There currently exists a fund that was started by the legislature over a decade ago at Teacher Standards and Practices Commission that has about $20,000 in it for National Board Certification. And each year we assist applicants who are applying for National Board Certification in a partnership with the National Boards organization. This just adds language. The Dash 1 amendment said, for any other national organization, it said designated by the State Board of Ed, but this is a fund in our office, and it really would be more appropriately designated by the commission. So Legislative Council helped us fix that. Then the second change is in line 16. You'll see that sentence starts now as provided by subsection 3. It just links up here because the current existing statutory language allows us to help administrators too, because we now have, we're moving very closely to national board certification for principals, and it allows us to keep them folded into the whole equation. So they were minor changes, and I have to tell you, I had to comb the bill line by line to find them myself.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And how much is dash 2 differ from the House Bill 3619?
Thank you, Chair Haas. What I would say the difference from 3619 is the fact that this supports the work that was done and will move us forward. We would like to make sure that, particularly, that the national standards are adopted for teachers and administrator. And the other piece with the National Board certification is the fact that we haven't set a target goal, but with the funds that are already in TSPC, that we were looking at making sure that pre-service teachers knew about this and to help them take a course in before they became teachers so that they understand the value and what it looks like to have that certification in their pocket.
I apologize. I didn't mean to ask you that. That's the bill from last session.
Right.
I was wondering how much it differs from the bill you originally introduced this session, if it's evolved much, the dash twos.
The dash twos limits the amount of information that we can share about administrators in particular, because this does all the pieces for teachers, but we had to delete a number of paragraphs about administrators.
Why was that?
Because of the narrow relating clause.
I see. Okay.
Because we stole your bill.
I know. It was given.
Yes, you graciously shared that with us. But that's why we had to make the change. And we got three legislative council perspectives on that, and so I gave up after the third one.
There's a line from The Godfather, "Power is not given, it is taken."
Well, I don't know if Senator Bonamici might agree, but I try to follow the advice I'm given.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have some other people who would like to testify on this. Randy Hitz.
That was Dean Hitz here.
I'm sorry, Dean. Morgan Allen, Lindsay Capps. Chalkboard? Cindy? I had your dad as Candy.
Candy, Cindy, whatever works
for that. Chair Haas, members of the committee, Lindsay Capps with the Oregon Education Association. I want to personally apologize to the chair that I do not come bearing rolls or coffee today, but I will say that we are very supportive of the amendments to Senate Bill 333, as was referenced in the testimony previously. We were involved in the House Bill 3619 work group process, which brought together a whole host of experts and stakeholders in education to look at how we build a seamless system to support effective teaching and learning in our schools. And we think this is a very valuable and potentially transformative effort that can be undertaken here in Oregon, I think in line with other efforts that are happening. I just want to say a couple of things about how we look at this legislation from the perspective of teachers. And I think what comes out of this process, I think, is a very strong sense that if we were to pursue the strategies outlined in this bill, that we will actually be doing, I think, some fairly helpful things to support educators in their professional practice, because it's really looking at educators across the continuum from pre-service to induction when you have new teachers to continuous improvement onward into ongoing leadership development as folks move through the career. And I think that's a really valuable way to look at effective teaching in those terms. I think this is an important bill in terms of educator preparation in particular. I think there's an opportunity to build really powerful relationships between university faculty and those going through teacher preparation to have some clinical experience during pre-service, more so than we've seen in some time, which I think will help to make sure we have highly qualified teachers going into the profession. And I think it will also help us to build some more support features for those who have entered the profession in those really tough first couple of years where we see a lot of teacher attrition, to actually build some support through mentorship and other efforts that will help make sure that teachers are supported in the classroom. And lastly, this provides for as we saw with Senate Bill 290 that you guys have also reported out, a focus on evaluation and professional growth systems to make sure that we are supporting teachers in their professional practice and the advancement of their skills and knowledge. And I think recognizing the really symbiotic relationship that exists between principals as education leaders and teachers. So with that, we just express our support for the amendment and thank Representative Comp for her work in leading this process. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Haas. Members of the committee, Morgan Allen representing the Oregon School Boards Association here in support of the Dash 2 amendments for Senate Bill 333. Not to be repetitive, but just appreciate the work of Representative Comp and the task force on this bill. A couple of things that Lindsay didn't mention that we're particularly interested in. There's language in there, you know, it's, a lot of it's about leadership development and improving the teaching profession and professional development, but our School Board Association is particularly excited about the language in there that will deal with, hopefully be able to help deal with the shortfall for math, science, special ed, second language teachers. There's some language in there that we're very appreciative of, and we also are excited about the focus on national standards and certification and getting some core standards in place for teachers. So those are a couple aspects that my colleague from OEA I don't think mentioned, so I will not repeat the other things that we also agree with, but I would just urge the committee to support the bill as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I'm with the Chalkboard Project. If you'll give me a little latitude for an aside here, my parents have a dog that I won't play with because you play, it brings you a toy and it won't let go, and it shakes it and it shakes it. I can hold the toy up and the dog hangs off it, still shaking, shaking. So I just won't do it anymore because that dog doesn't ever let go. It's the most tenacious dog. The dog's name is Lucy and it should be Betty. This has been such a great thing that Representative Comp has been working on from the start with 3619 all the way through the interim with her work on the NTAS committee, and now bringing this bill forward, and not only starting it in the House, but finding a way to start in the Senate. We commend Chalkboard Project her leadership in launching this conversation and keeping at it. As you know, and as we've repeated here many times, we believe a quality teacher is the number one most important thing we can provide to children. And by making sure that this is happening both in how they're taught to teach and how they teach and how they continue to grow as they teach is why this bill is so important to us. We are particularly interested in the part of the bill that Lindsay pointed out that has to do with evaluation. It coincides with the Senate Bill 290 that you passed out of here, and we think it's an important part of using measures that are research-based and distinguish different levels of proficiency, using multiple measures of proficiency, and help our teachers to improve in that transition from going to education school to actually utilizing those skills. So we also are encouraged by the use of the emphasis on National Board Certified Teachers in this legislation. We hope to grow that group. And again, on the listing of NTASC, the National Commission on Teaching and America's Future, the Quality Teaching and Learning Group within this bill that will be working with the Department of Education and TSPC on the guidelines. I would say that when the bill does get to the House, we'd like to make sure that those guidelines are not only something that's adopted by TSPC, but some amount of approval comes in from the Department of Education. That's what 290 looked like when it left here, and we're hoping to have that make sure that both do the same thing when it gets over to the House. But this is a great bill and such a great effort and such a great little bulldog Representative Comp is. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucy wears wonderful colors today.
She does.
Questions or comments? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 333 and get a sign up? Yeah?
Thanks, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Advocacy Director with Stand for Children, and I don't need to repeat what's been said. The only thing I wanted to add is McKinsey & Company out of England did a study on the best performing school systems in the world a few years back, and what is in now Senate Bill 333 of the Dash 2 amendments aligns with what they found the best performing school systems in the world are doing, which is one of the things they're all doing is doing a great job of training their teachers and making sure that that training is incredibly practical and relevant to their teaching, and then continuing to provide them with great professional development throughout their career. So we support this legislation as well.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, we close the public hearing on Senate Bill 333. We can't pass this on today because we don't have the proper paperwork, but we could and should, I think, adopt the Dash 2 amendments. So I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 333.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 12, 2011, to Senate Bill 333.
Senator Morse moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated April 12, 2011, to Senate Bill 333. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
I'll support these as long as this does not become known as the dog and coffee bill.
I'm wondering if there's anything more going on. Further discussion? Senator Shields.
Should we have a charge?
Here we go.
Bills
here we
come
go.
Over here. A fee.
Just
other funds.
Is there objection? If not, the amendment is adopted, and we will take up Senate Bill 333 for a vote when we get all the proper paperwork in, and so we will carry that action over.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 330, Town and Gifted Children. Linda, if you could give us the summary on the amendment. Yeah.
Okay, sure.
An overview.
We've heard Senate Bill 330 before. It has a Dash 2 amendment, and this basically replaces the original bill. The Dash 2 establishes a task force, and the task force is appointed by the Superintendent of Public Instruction on the Instruction of Talented and Gifted Children, TAG. Directs the task force to determine the resources needed to provide TAG instruction, the appropriate level of funding, potential funding methods, and the number of children who would benefit. Requires the task force to submit a report and recommendations to the interim legislative committees on education. Directs the Department of Education to provide staff support, and all agencies are to assist the task force in the performance of its duties. Declares an emergency and takes effect on passage.
Okay. Margaret DeLacy, did you want to testify?
Good afternoon, Senator Haas and members of the committee. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to be here today. I'd like to introduce Celia Bakuli, who is a local parent, and she's here to answer any questions you may have today, along with me. I'm here to testify. My name is Margaret DeLacy, for the record. I am a member of the Government Relations Committee of the Oregon Association for Talented and Gifted, and I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 330. I just heard testimony about Senate Bill 333, which would enhance administrator and particularly teacher training. We would like to be folded into some of that. There is a National Association for Gifted Children has standards for training teachers. Frequently when these committees are formed, we are not involved or consulted, and as a result, we end up promoting expensive retroactive measures that could be folded into bills or committees when the idea is formed. We believe that having a TAG advisory committee will give us a little bit more capacity and a little bit more ability to participate in this kind of activity, so a little bit more of a voice to make the state able to leverage the resources it has more efficiently. We believe that there are three bills in the legislature this session, which are kind of three legs of a stool. One of them is House Bill 2180, which passed through the House chamber next week. I really hope that you will consider it. It requires school districts to send copies of TAG plans that they are already required to have under the TAG mandate to the State Department of Education so that an advisory committee would have information about what districts are doing for its own deliberations. Right now, that information is not available at the State Department. We don't know what our school districts are doing. And when you ask me questions, sometimes it's very hard for me to provide that information because I don't really have access to that either.
Right.
The second is this bill. It sets up a TAG advisory committee, TAG task force. I can see Linda looking at me. We believe that this task force could review some of this information and come up with a proposal for you next biennium, which will enable us to make efficient and effective use of any funding that you would be interested in providing for TAG services. We, like you, don't want to see a single dollar of TAG money or of education funding wasted. The third bill is being heard in the House tomorrow. It is House Bill 3463. It increases the current state appropriation for talented and gifted services by $50,000. If that bill passes, and I realize it's a big if, we believe that that money could be used by the department to help fund the task force that you are setting up under this legislation. So all three pieces of legislation hang together and will help get us started in addressing the needs of this rather large population of students in the state who have been neglected. I've also passed out a document which addresses a question that Senator Bonamici had for me last time I came to talk about this bill on our expenditures on TAG compared with our expenditures on other special needs students. Unfortunately, we did not even collect accurate information about the number of TAG students we had or report it in the Oregon report card until, I believe, about 2004-05. So that's why the back of this contains per capita information only from 2004-05. The other side, I believe, is similar to the table I handed out before, shows the state funding for these three special populations for the past decade. And as you can see, we have substantially increased our commitment to special education and ELL students. Our TAG funding has been roughly level for over a decade, despite inflation. And the result is we have really made no progress in serving these students. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. And if you have questions about personal experiences, you might want to direct them to Celia.
Thank you, Margaret. I've got to hand it to you. You have these three bills. It looks like a three-pronged attack.
You're correct.
And it's, so you've got the beginnings of a movement here almost. And this is just one. This would complement the other bills, and they would mesh well. Questions, Senator Bonamici?
I don't have questions. I just want to thank Margaret. I know she's been working on this for years, and it's really an important issue. I was a public school parent for 16 years and really saw a lot of lost potential because there are kids who are really at the top who aren't being challenged. And that's not true, of course, across the board because a lot of it depends on the school, the teacher, the size of the class, and lots of other factors. But I do believe that there's a significant amount of lost potential, and we have to find a way to address that. I also believe, and I don't know the data on this, that that the reason a lot of kids drop out is because they're bored. It's not because they can't do the work. It's because they aren't being challenged. And so I think that's contributing to our dropout rates. And so I would I applaud Margaret for continuing to work on this. I'm not going to call her the kind of dog that gets bites onto a toy, but she's really been tenacious. And thank you for doing this, and let's continue the discussion, and hopefully we'll come up with some way to meet the needs of all our kids.
Thank you. And your chart is very sobering here. Mm-hmm. Really is. Senator Morse?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your work. My children were the beneficiaries of a TAG program and received great benefit from it. My question is, have we gone through a task force process with TAG in the past, or is this the first attempt to keep it before us?
Senator Haas, Senator Morse, that's a kind of complicated question. I can only speak from my own memory. To the best of my recollection, there has been nothing equivalent to this. I know of two previous statewide efforts to investigate what's going on with TAG. One was roughly the turn of this century, about 1999, 2000, I believe, when the TAG administrator called together state TAG coordinators to discuss whether Oregon was close to being in compliance with the NAGC TAG standards. They concluded that there were huge gaps, and nothing resulted from that. The only product I know is a white paper that came out of that that reached that conclusion. The second was a state Department of Education effort to take testimony. They didn't call it hearings. I think they called them input sessions on TAG. They were carried out at the education service districts via VTALs. So they were I'd say they were statewide input sessions. People had access to ESDs all over the state. They produced a report for the State Department of Education. I have distributed that report in previous sessions. I would be very happy to provide you with a report again. I believe, off the top of my head, it was roughly 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. And again, they concluded that there were major gaps and that this was an area that needed to be addressed.
Yes, and thank you. I don't need the report. I've seen the data, but I was curious if we were plowing recently plowed ground, and you're suggesting that.
Chair Haas, Senator Morse, OTAG has been requesting a TAG advisory committee or task force for several sessions, and as far as I know, nobody has offered it to us.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Bonamici.
We might, I might want to talk with Senator Morse a bit offline to find out what you said your kids benefited from a TAG program, and I'd be interested in getting a little bit more information about pre-Measure 5 TAG, because post-Measure 5 and with budget cuts, and I do not mean this to be a criticism, because our teachers are struggling with large class sizes and budget cuts, but to my kids it mostly meant, here, you can do next week's work this week. Mm-hmm. And that's not what TAG is intended to be. So, but a lot of that is because they're dealing with huge class sizes, and it's very hard to differentiate among all the different levels of need and possibility in a classroom when you have 40 kids in a classroom. And that was true in some of the high schools. There were 35, 40 kids in the classroom, and it's very hard for teachers to differentiate. And in the elementary schools and middle schools as well, the class sizes are too big. We don't have the funding for smaller classrooms that will allow our teachers to differentiate. And so we have some serious issues to deal with. And I don't mean that as criticism of the school district. I have had great things to say about the school district that my kids attended, but there wasn't the ability for them to meet the needs of all the kids in those classes.
Chair Haas, Senator Bonamici, I'm going to reply briefly, and then maybe Celia would have something she'd like to say. I can see she's in total agreement with what you're saying. We believe that it's very important to retain some money centrally and invest it in teacher training and professional development, because it would help teachers manage these very large classrooms and do a better job for all children. There was just a study that came out this week showing that TAG training, in fact, benefits all the students in a school, and we think we could be doing a much better job of this if it was folded in more effectively to pre-licensure as well as to post-licensure training. Celia, do you want to say something about that?
Okay, so I am Celia Bakuli. I am a Salem resident, a Salem parent. I am a parent volunteer in my son's Title I elementary school. I'm currently the president of the Title I Parent Advisory Committee for the Salem-Keizer School District, but I am not speaking for that committee today. I am also currently a member of the TAG Advisory Committee for Salem-Keizer, also not officially representing them today. And most importantly, I am the mother of two wonderful, wonderful sons. I think that differentiating for TAG and high ability students helps everybody, because when the teacher learns and is able to practice those strategies, also the students that are farther behind for a combination of reasons, and usually socioeconomic and factors in the home is the major reason, they can reach everybody much more effectively. And there are strategies that don't take money but do take training. We've been really blessed with wonderful, wonderful caring teachers, and there are thousands of children in Oregon just waiting for somebody to challenge them.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you for your service, too. It sounds like you've got a playbook. So.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon.
All right. With no one else to testify on Senate Bill 330, I'm going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 330 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 330. Senator Morris, we have a fiscal that says there is no fiscal cost to this for the state. We have two amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the two amendments to Senate Bill 330 dated April 12, 2011.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the two amendments dated April 12, 2011 to Senate Bill 330. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 330 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 330 as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator George.
I typically don't support task force, but I think this handout that we have here about the investment that we had was probably one of the most influential things I've seen in a long time. We have a tendency here to always talk about those people who lay out, they have some kind of need and they have some kind of status that we feel bad for them, and so we pour money in those directions. The fact is that this state is dependent on the students on the left of this agenda. I mean, left of this chart, the talented and gifted, these kids are being stunted, and that's really the future of the state. And to think of the fact that we always play the heartstrings, but we really don't look to the future and say, how do we invest in these kids, has convinced me that we need to move something forward, even if we don't have the money to do it. At least we'd move a task force to keep the discussion alive. So I'm going to break my rule and vote for a task force.
Thank you. And I do agree with that, Senator George. And I also think that this is one of a trifecta of bills going through the House that together will add up to more than three. So any objection to Senate Bill 330? Seeing none, Senate Bill 330 passes with a due pass recommendation to the Senate floor. It has come to me. I'll be the carrier.
Okay.
And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 330. And I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 240.
Linda.
Senate Bill 240 requires school districts to develop the policy prohibiting harassment, intimidation, or bullying, and prohibiting cyberbullying after consultation with parents, guardians, school employees, volunteers, students, administrators, and community representatives, requires school employees to report hostile acts, allows remedial action for failure to report, allows voluntary and anonymous reporting by students or volunteers, allows increased remedial actions if conspiracy or subsequent similar acts occur, requires the school to prominently post the policy, requires school or district to report to law enforcement incidents that violate criminal statutes.
Thank you. Senator Berger, you spectating today, or Senator Berger? Did you want to present, or are you just?
I'll just watch a minute.
Okay.
You have a letter in front of you.
Correct. Okay. Andrea Meyer.
Good afternoon, Chair House, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I am here today in opposition to Senate Bill 240. I'm sorry, and I do apologize that I did not testify in opposition last time. I know I was here at the hearing, and I know Lori spoke on behalf of the Oregon School Board Association and raised some of our concerns, but I wanted to flesh them out a little bit more. What I'm handing you is a report that the ACLU of Oregon did recently regarding called the Oregon School to Prison Pipeline, and I thought it was informative to frame why we have concerns about this specific proposal in the larger context of what we found. And the School to Prison Pipeline refers to the disproportionate punishment of students of color that begins with more serious punishment than their peers in school and greater likelihood of intervention in the juvenile justice authority system. Our report show that there are such discriminatory impacts in Oregon that are consistent across the country, even though it has been shown that students of color are no more likely to violate school rules than their white counterparts. But what we've seen is a harsher punishment in schools eventually graduates to a greater likelihood of intervention and incarceration in the juvenile justice system and later the adult justice system. So our report focuses on Oregon's public school disciplinary data for the years 2008 to 2009, and they're broken out by race and ethnicity. And this report includes data on suspensions, expulsions, referrals to alternative education setting, and dropout rates. And it confirms, unfortunately, that a disproportionate representation of youth of color is also reflected in data for the juvenile and adult correction systems. I just want to highlight 4 points and then move specifically to the bill. Among our findings in this report, and I really do encourage you at some other time to look at this more carefully, and it is a project we're working on and working with the Superintendent of Public Instruction and other stakeholders to continue to collect the data. If you don't have the information, you can't address the issues and know what's going on. But we found that African-American students represent about 3% of Oregon students, but they represent 7% of students who receive out-of-school suspensions. Native American students represent 2% of all students, but they represent 3% of students removed to alternate education settings. Hispanic students represent about 17% of all students, but they represent more than 25% of all students expelled. White students represent 68% of all students in Oregon, but only 61.5% of those expelled. So when we look at legislation regarding disciplinary issues, we are concerned and come in with that framework. When it comes to Senate Bill 240, the page one that talks about requiring a school employee to report an act of harassment and so on, we have no objection to that. I think the Oregon School Board Association, having shown me model policies and sent them all to you, would say they're doing that. But our focus of concern is specifically with the language around page two, and language that starts entangling with law enforcement issues and sort of the criminal justice system. And let me briefly go over those. It's almost easier to require or to look at the summary to describe one of the pieces, but it requires school or school district to report to law enforcement incidents that may have violated criminal statute when it comes to these particular areas. And let it be clear, I mean, ACLU has been involved in the bullying, cyberbullying legislation. We're certainly concerned. We've joined with our coalition partners in supporting the policy last session. We think there is, we've heard the stories, but we think in the larger context of disciplinary issues, bringing in law enforcement is always a concern to us in the schools. To the degree that teachers and principals already have the authority to bring in law enforcement when there are incidents that arise to a crime, that's appropriate. But what we get concerned about is language that a teacher or a school has to determine that it may have been a criminal action, and therefore they call in police. We get quite concerned, as I said, when police are brought into school. Then there's also to be increased penalties or remedial action laid out in a policy if a person conspired with another person to commit the act of harassment and so on. I look at that and I see kind of criminal justice language. A conspiracy is elements often met in a criminal case that usually I believe the prosecutor has to establish separately. I don't know how teachers are going to determine whether someone conspired. I know, unfortunately, when it comes to texting issues and some aspects of bullying, there are multiple people involved. They all need to be disciplined. They all need to be individually addressed, specifically to that individual student and what's going on with them. But a determination of conspiracy may start rising to due process hearings and other things that gets complicated. We really have concerns about that language. I think what I'd encourage is, you know, this law for which Senator Verger is seeking to add was recently passed. And I think in the 2009 session, and the Oregon School Board Association, and I don't know when it went into effect, but I know it takes time. I've seen their policies. I think it's a very good law. What I would encourage that we do is we need to look at what actually the school districts are adopting policies. It requires that they adopt policies. So I think the next step is to look at those policies, talk to the stakeholders. Is there a gap in the law? Where is a problem? Is there not enough guidance from the legislature to give you the authority to deal aggressively with this like any other discipline issue? If there are, then let's come back and look at those. Maybe look at it in terms of standards that the schools already use in other situations rather than this new language. I think it's an ongoing conversation. We would just urge not to move forward with this particular addition right now and continue to monitor and be better informed about how this policy is working and where there are problems. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I appreciate you having a chance to hopefully look at our piece and answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's fair to say that what didn't exist in my generation are these playgrounds that are in cyberspace. And you have playground bullying there just like you did on my old playgrounds. So if this isn't the way there, Andrea, how do you get at this, which is a very real issue in a lot of our schools and with a lot of our kids?
So, Senator Hass, I think, well, what you don't have in front of you with Senate Bill 240 is the actual law. And you and I talked last session how confusing it is. But we actually have a law making it crystal clear that it is not tolerated on school property, adjacent to school property, in the standard. So I think we've got the law. And then we have this new policy that doesn't say school districts may, school districts should. It says school districts shall. So I think we've made it clear that there needs to be policies in place. So I'm not answering your question because I'm not sure where the gap is that you're addressing. If there is a gap in the disciplinary practices and policies, they need to be directed to all the disciplinary policies. Bringing a gun or a weapon into school is also a very serious issue. There are a gradation of discipline and serious issues, and I'm not going to rank this over or above or below any of them. But we know we have a range of less serious to very serious issues. And any policies need to start reflecting how to deal with all of those. But we also have a specific policy in statute. And I'm not sure we do with the school board folks could testify. I'm not sure we do with other disciplinary policies. We represented a child who brought in a toy gun this big, a little toy gun connected to a soldier. And he was disciplined with a suspension and something in his record. I don't think there's anything in Oregon statute addressing how the school should handle it, and they look to change their policy. So I think we already have said, bullying, cyberbullying harassment is particularly important, and it's important for the state, so we pass a statute.
Senator Bonner, me too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if Senator Verger wants to come up, because I, or maybe just nod, or yes or no. Because I think that the addition of the requirement, and, you know, clarifying in here, Andrea, you said that this language on page one that requires the reporting, you said that you think that that's already in the policies. I think that that's pretty important to clarify, and I agree with that part. I am a little bit concerned because in the last time we had the hearing on the 29th of March, there was a concern raised about how would the teachers actually know when they were supposed to report something to law enforcement, and I have a little bit of a concern about that portion, and I wonder if you've talked about it, whether Senator Verger would maybe be willing to have the part that requires the reporting to law enforcement taken out, but still pass the bill to clarify that there has to be the reporting. I don't know if you've talked about that, or if you'd be willing to consider
my intent,
Senator Verger.
Is to move from encourage to say you must do this, just as you do with child abuse. And you see a child, and we all have to do that. If we see a child that we have every belief that child has been abused, the teacher should report to her supervisor, her administrator, her principal. And then if there is good reason and cause to believe that this is going on, this conspiring, this student is being harassed, changing behavior, the all the signs of withdrawal, then I think the last thing is to bring in the police. I think that they need to handle it just as they would any other kind of problem. But bullying is more serious in that the consequences to the student that's being bullied has been shown to be far, far more serious. I want to address what Andrea has said, though, because I want to support one part of what she says, and that is that there is a tremendous disparity in our society for minority students, and so I want to agree with that. I have no problem, and that is wrong. That is absolutely wrong, and the data supports the fact that that's true. I don't see the connection, though, with that particular issue and cyberbullying. I think that cyberbullying, and this is really intended to raise the awareness. If you've had a chance to read my letter, it says, I hope that just the awareness will help be a deterrent to young people, because I think if you feel like there might be some kind of repercussions to what you're doing, and the argument that I've heard, well, this is takes place off of the school grounds. So does child abuse. Takes place off the school ground. So it can take place on the school ground with cell phones. It can take place off the school grounds. So, but my intent certainly is not to have someone just think maybe some people are conspiring and call the police. That would be the most extreme actions. That is not the intent of the bill at all.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici.
I'm just pondering, because I have concerns about how the teachers and the administrators would know whether something may have violated a criminal statute. And maybe somebody from the schools can come up and explain what they do currently if somebody reports something, and how do they know when it's bad enough to call the police? I just am struggling with that section, but I do support the requirement that clarifies that if there's an act of harassment, intimidation, or bullying, it needs to be reported to the person who in the prior bill we set up the structure here that someone has to be responsible for this.
And I appreciate the conversation, Senator Bonamici. I really do. This is the thing. If we allow it to go on, it will continue and it will get bigger and worse. It's already bad enough. What I want to say is that actually the person that's being bullied, if they're young and they may not want to do this, but they can have a pretty good bit of proof They can bring, when you leave messages on your cell phone, you save those messages and you bring them in. So there is a tangible proof to this. And if they text or if they send you emails, you also have cameras. You know that people are now taking pictures of very undesirable pictures of students and then putting them out in public array. This is all bullying, and I think that we need very badly to have a deterrent. And I think just to have it too soft, and I was extremely cautious because I was approached by one of our colleagues who said, you know, I hope that you won't make this bill so tough and hard that you start getting young people that are innocent, that are just playing around, in trouble. And so I've tried to leave it very soft at the discretion of the school officials.
Sure.
Chuck Bennett, do you...
I'd love someone to jump in. Can I make a comment about...
From the school's perspective?
I'd love for them to come up.
Lori, Sachsville.
While one of them come up, if I could clarify and the thing that concerns me is I believe that... Oh, Chuck, hi, welcome. I believe the schools already have probably and deal with all the time the issue of when you call law enforcement. Because they may get a bomb threat, they may get various things, they may have activities related to bullying that start getting into the criminal justice system. What worries me is when we start putting in statutes specific language regarding that, that is, to me at least, unclear and may likely err on the side of the... when it comes to discipline on this, more likely calling law enforcement. And I'm not sure if when you need to deal with the bullying and the harassment and the texting and things that are going on, that weighing on the side of calling law enforcement is the best approach. These are complicated issues. I went to school 2 years ago, and some things I try not to remember. The dynamic of when law enforcement should be called should be a very serious thing in the school, and I believe the schools probably have it in their policies. So the reason I connected sort of to our disproportionate issues around racial justice were because this has to do with discipline. I'm not saying that, and we haven't studied whether these types of incidents actually maybe more affect students of color or less, are done by students of color. We're very nervous when there's a really strong instruction in statute to bring law enforcement in. We're very nervous when schools and teachers and principals are being asked to determine language around conspiracy. I'm confident with this strong policy already in place that schools know they need to call law enforcement in certain situations, and we do not need to put it in statutes.
I do agree with Senator Verger, though, that the problem with the disproportionate punishment to people of color is a problem, but I don't see the connection here. So just hold on. So, Lori, could you tell us how this how the new law works, whether it needs to be clarified?
I talk with my policy, Lori Satinsville for the Oregon School Boards Association. Thanks, Andrea. And I did resend and the policies and administrative regulations as outlined in House Bill 2599 from 2009. And it was our understanding that we do have to report, and it is in the policy, that you shall report acts of harassment, intimidation, bullying, cyberbullying, as outlined in the policy. And we do have in the administrative regulations for the person or the employee who is supposed to accept these reports and outlined in a model policy, because each district then takes the model policy and then adjusts it to where they think they need to be in their local district. So we, again, supply model policies.
Question? Thank you. So, Lori, you said it says that you do have to report. Mm-hmm. Does that mean the teacher has to report to the person who's designated under this section to be the school official responsible for receiving such a report? Or are you talking about when they have to report to law enforcement? Because there's two separate reporting steps. And the first one, I completely, totally agree with you and with Senator Verger, that we want to make sure that if the teacher or someone, staff in the school, knows of something, that they report it to this person who's been identified as the person who's responsible under the 2009 law, where we said somebody in the school has to be responsible for this. So that's one part of reporting. But the second part, the part that I have a question about, is at what point does that person who's the designated official, responsible official, at what point and under what circumstances does that person then bring in the law enforcement? Because that's the second part, and that's the part that I'm a little bit more concerned about.
Chair Haas, Senator Bonamici, that is exactly what I was concerned about, is when would that person know when it's legally they need to report. Child abuse and something that relates to an assault is pretty obvious for someone. I talked with our legal department, and they say some schools have the school resource officer, which is this issue would be much more easily to be dealt with. The small schools that don't have that, it's a little more problematic for those to figure out when it does rise to that level of, you know, whether it's a repeat offender that, you know, it's been progressively getting worse. So I don't really have a great answer for that other than we're concerned as well.
Senator Haas, I need to hear the language that says they shall. I've only seen the language that says they are encouraged.
Well, that's what this bill, that's the vote, are encouraged to, would be deleted and replaced by shall.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berger, sorry, but to step in here, but the encouraged to shall just has to do with who has to be consulted in setting up the policy. On page 1, lines 7 and 8, yeah. If you look at line 6, each school district shall adopt a policy, and the changing the encouraged to shall just has to do with who has to be around the table when they're adopting the policy. The additional language that I don't have any problem with at all is on page 1, lines 25 to page 2, line 1, that talks about how to require a school employee to report an act of harassment to the person in paragraph A, which is the responsible person who's identified. That part, I think, I agree that that should be clarified, that somebody has to report if a school employee must report the harassment, intimidation, or bullying to the responsible person. So changing the encouraged to shall just has to do with who has to be around the table. Should it be parents, guardians, school employees, volunteers, students, et cetera? So this changes it to say that they shall develop the policy after consulting with all those people, but I don't think that's the issue that we're all concerned about here. Not who's around the table, because I think most schools probably already have the policy. I think the issue is clarifying when somebody at the school has to report it to the responsible person, and that, Mr. Chair, I think is really the heart of what we're talking about.
Senator Haas, Senator Bonamici, I think that the discretion of the school is the only way that you could do that. I think that every case is going to be so unique and so very different. The bullying policy has had to be in place for a long time. That was not addressing cyberbullying. That was addressing just bullying on the school ground. They've had to have a policy. They've had to post it in the schools. All of those things have been in effect for several years anyway.
Right. And in 2009, we did a separate cyberbullying bill.
Senator George?
If I can just make sure I understand, it seems like to me what we're really, the guts of the bill is actually in Section 3 on page 3, lines 13 through 16. And Senator Berger, if I can for a moment see if I'm speaking correctly here. What you're trying to do is get to kind of the same thing we have with all of us on child abuse, where we must report. And that's what you're trying to get at. And as I see Section 3, lines 13 through 16, it's that changing it from is encouraged to must report. Because in the bill, you've deleted out student or volunteer. So we're not requiring students and volunteer to be mandatory reporters into this bill. We're saying if you're a school employee, you must report the act to the appropriate school official designated by a school district's policy. So it seems like to me that the gist of the whole bill, all the other stuff that's Andrea is worried about, can be ignored if we just adopt Section 3 of the bill. Is that correct? Because what you're really trying to do is make sure that the school employees report to their superior.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's the same thing that's on page 1, so it's sort of double, right. Double requirement.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to testify on this bill, Senate Bill 240? Okay. Well, if not, then I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 240. And I want to remind everyone that we are carrying over Senate Bills 170, 333, and SJR 4, as well as this one we just heard, Senate Bill 240. There's no other business? We are adjourned.